Folks, it's springtime, and this week's special at drhoffman.com is Core Restore, a one-stop shop for your detoxification needs. That's Core Restore. Look for it at drhoffman.com and come browse our full selection of great products at drhoffman.com. Click on the store. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. With me today is Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin, because it's that time of the week again. It is time for Q&A with Layla. And so, welcome, Layla.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Once again, for those of you who are newbies, who are new to the Intelligent Medicine Podcasts, it's become a tradition. On a weekly basis, we answer listener questions. I do a duet with Layla Mudin, who is my colleague at the Hoffman Center. She and I see patients together on a daily basis, and she is a registered dietitian, but she also has an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition. So between us, I hope we are eminently qualified to answer questions.
I should hope so.
Okay. With I don't even want to say how many years' experience collectively under our belts, because that would be very, very revealing about our advanced stage of life. Let's say no more about that. All right. So this, by the way, this week we see the first glimmerings of spring. And
those I'm afraid to say it.
Yeah, we might jinx it because we might have a snowstorm. Yeah. There have been April snowstorms in New York. So
yes.
Let's not jinx it. But there was a little snow on the ground, not in New York, but near New York on Monday. And now
Monday morning it snowed in Long Island City, Queens.
Right.
There was snow.
Remember that podcast that we did this winter and we took a picture and we were wearing our hats and our mufflers and our jackets.
Yes.
And we were all bundled up. Well, I hope... This is what I aspire to, is that in a very few weeks, we will do a podcast sitting in our bathing attire.
Oh, yeah. I'll bring my beach ball.
You bring your beach ball and your pail and your shovel, and we'll do, you know, with the portable broadcasting these days, maybe we can actually do it outside. All right, so folks, you expect more than just a weather report from us. So, by the way, this... Before we get into our questions, let me mention that this has been a very prolific week for me. Mm-hmm. I have been busily tapping away, writing some what I hope are interesting blogs. I just wrote one for the Hoffman Center newsletter that will be released later this week. For some of you who are listening to this, it may be out already. It's 12 supplements you should never take.
Wow.
Okay, so we're going to put that up on the newsletter. And I wrote an article for MindBodyGreen on, get this, check this out for a catchy title, 20 Completely Unexpected Heart Disease Risks You Probably Never Dreamt You Had.
Wow. So that should be revealing.
That's on MindBodyGreen. Hopefully we'll get a lot of hits on that, and lots of people will be sharing that article, because I think there are going to be some real reveals there, some things that people... Barely suspected. And a spoiler alert on that, number one on the list, diet soda. Who would have thunk? Because a lot of people virtuously consume diet soda, and they think that diet soda is going to somehow dispel their diabetes and heart disease risk.
It's an insulin trigger.
Yeah.
No.
But it turns out, no. And this was actually presented just last week at the American Cardiology Conference, the ACC, which has held all the cardiologists in the country and from around the world get together, and they discuss the latest findings. And it was revealed that diet soda, lo and behold, is not helpful for the heart. In fact, harmful to the heart. Women who took the most diet cola were 50% more likely to die from heart disease.
Wow.
Right? So... That's number one. You get, there are 19 more. Go to MindBodyGreen and catch the whole article this week. All right. Let's talk nutrition and medicine. Let's hear what some of our listeners have on their agenda. What are some of the questions?
Okay. The first one comes from Howard. Can you suggest a supplement to aid in a sports-related calf injury? Something to heal a sports-related calf injury?
Oh, I thought you said cap injury.
Oh, no, calf.
I'm thinking baseball. So you're like, what, did you damage your Yankees cap? Oh, calf injury. All right. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is Wobenzyme, which is a proteolytic enzyme mixed with bromelain, and that actually is a potent combination for dispelling swelling and inflammation. So that's something that we can recommend because it's used a lot in Europe. It hasn't really made as much of a splash here in this country, but I recommend it. I also recommend it in and around surgery, which is deliberately inflicted trauma. You have to think of surgery as it's like deliberate injury.
Yes, yes.
Intentional absolutely. Injury. So that should help the traditional recommendations, rest, ice, compression, elevation.
Anti-inflammatories are often helpful.
Yeah, let's talk about what are some of the natural anti-inflammatories.
The natural ones like Boswellian, like curcumin, fish oil, certainly, without saying. After trauma, I think magnesium goes down as well. But just the first things that should pop on to anyone's mind, vitamin C, zinc, to aid in repair.
Right.
That's more like a collagen thing, but, you know, I think it's helpful in muscle as well. So these would be good things to take.
Yeah, and that should help to resolve. Also, there's a nice product called Toprosin, which we recommend that you rub on to traumatic injuries.
It's a nice cream, right.
Yeah, and it's all natural ingredients, so that is a good thing to apply.
Be careful that you don't go back to activity too soon. You don't want to re-injure yourself.
Right. And, you know, this brings up another issue. When you have a calf injury, or even worse, an Achilles tear, and some people, actually I had a guy who told me that this happened to him. He was playing basketball and he didn't warm up properly. He just went directly from sitting to playing with a bunch of young kids. And he was running around, all of a sudden he felt this, he said he could hear it, a snap in his calf muscle.
And ouch.
Those shortened calf muscles, so you get older, they require a little more warm-up time and you jump up and down, you try and do a basketball layup and you land and boom, or you change direction while you're playing tennis, snap. And what can make this worse is a category of antibiotics, several antibiotics, the what are called fluoroquinolones.
Yeah.
Fluoroquinolones. FQ syndrome means that you have possibility of collagen damage and connective tissue injury. And this can occur anywhere in the body, but it's actually these are notorious for causing Achilles heel ruptures while you take those antibiotics. So if you are prescribed these antibiotics, first of all, try not to take them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take them, absolutely refrain from vigorous physical exercise and even take it easy walking, because with very little trauma, you can have one of these injuries.
Besides Levaquin, what's another one in that category?
Levaquin, Cipro.
Cipro.
Those are the main ones.
Okay. You know, I recall, I don't know if we had a patient here, a young man hobbling around on a cane, and it was because of a round of Levaquin that this happened. So what's the prognosis on something like that?
There's two things. One is if you have a tear, it takes a long time, but it heals. It will knit together. Sometimes it may require surgery to put the Achilles tendon
back together.
The tendons
are the hardest, right. though, to really...
But the fluoroquinolone syndrome, or FQ syndrome, is a very serious problem. And there are actually support groups, and there's research underway to explore why some people get it and some people don't. And it's unclear what helps that. We've had some patients who have this. They seem to respond to intravenous vitamin C and high doses of magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
That may help, but it's really unclear if there's a specific antidote.
Wow.
It's a tough kind of problem. And people have developed all kinds of problems. They develop neuropathies and bizarre symptoms. After short bouts of using these fluoroquinolones for something minor like a urinary tract infection or bronchitis, these are medications to be very, very cautious around.
Wow.
So, okay, we started talking about calf injury. We got into that, but I think that's a useful digression.
Okay. I've got another one. This is from our good friend Kristen. She wanted to let us know that her mother was diagnosed via an EBT heart scan. They found an 80% blockage.
Okay. So let's talk about the EBT heart scan, which is something we send many patients for. This is a test which is non-invasive. It takes 15 minutes, and you lie on a table, and yes, there is some radiation, but the radiation exposure is...
Not like a CT scan.
It's less than a CT scan, because it's just looking for calcium. Mm-hmm. And if that's the test that she's talking about, that test cannot tell you that you are 80% blocked. It can only tell you, it gives you a numerical score, which tells you how much calcium is present in the coronary arteries. And to some extent, it can tell you if it's more in one artery or more in another or in all, mm-hmm. you know, three or, in fact, four arteries there. The 80% blockage part comes if you do what's called a CT angiogram. That's a CAT scan angiogram, which actually measures or estimates the caliber of your arteries and can tell you if you have a certain percentage blockage. The so-called gold standard for determining if you have blockage is, of course, the angiogram, which is done, you know, with a catheter, and it's done in hospital as a diagnostic procedure.
And at that point, they would stent you if they found something like that.
They would probably stent you if they, right. With 80% blockage, they probably would stent, although studies show that asymptomatic blockages like this, when treated with stents, it makes no difference in the outcome being subsequent mortality.
Wow.
And, you know, whether you live longer or not, whether it makes a difference. It doesn't seem to. So all the stents that we're doing in this country, because people are at risk, many of them, the vast majority, probably aren't going to make a difference in the final outcome. It mm-hmm. just seems reassuring when we blast open the arteries. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she wants to know, he wants advice. Well, that could be the basis for a whole mega workup at the Hoffman Center, because patients often come with these kinds of situations. What can I do? Is there an alternative?
Right.
I would say, you know, well, why don't you start with some nutritional suggestions?
Well, nutritional things, definitely, first of all, we want them on the proper diet. If they are overweight, if they're insulin resistant, if they have a high CRP, blood sugars, all of the inflammatory markers we would look for, we will try to diminish those with diet and lifestyle. Some very good supplements, certainly besides something like fish oil, absolutely. Antioxidants like gamma E, mixed tocopherols, vitamin D. We want to make sure they have plenty of vitamin D. We'd want to address any overweight issues or insulin resistance, maybe with CM Core, some chromium.
That's the berberine product that's actually not available in health food stores, but it's available via doctors, and we stock it at drhoffman.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We would look at all of this, absolutely. And maybe
resveratrol, kyolic, I can think of. But, you know, the point being is that we don't address the problem per se. We address the underlying causes of the problem, and then the problem will not get worse. But if we were to try and address the problem, we might consider chelation therapy, intravenous chelation therapy, which does seem to afford protection against heart attacks in people with heart disease, as per the recent big TACT study. People who had demonstrable heart disease, they'd already even had heart attacks, they were found to have fewer heart attacks and fewer heart problems, less need for subsequent bypass surgery or stents after, I think it was 40 chelations that they received.
Wow.
So this is a perfect candidate for a chelation. And she's down there in Florida?
I'm not sure where she is,
actually.
Well,
my impression was she was in Florida. You know, we do it here, of course, but there are hundreds of doctors across the country who do chelation therapy, and there's a directory of them on the website ACAM.org, which is the American College for Advancement in Medicine, and that's the organization which trains and certifies doctors in chelation therapy. Okay.
We do have a comment from somebody, Ari, who writes about Byron Richards' death. Byron died after collapsing while jogging. It's very sad. Would you address the reason of his death? Maybe there is something we could learn. After all, he was presumably a healthy person taking many different supplements. It scares me that a nutritionist could perish so suddenly while exercising. Thanks. You have the best natural health show out there.
That is very kind. Thank you. And, you know, one of the first edicts for a nutritional guru is not to die young. Do not die young, because it's really very bad form.
Yeah.
If you were an anti-aging doc who were, you know, encouraging people to seek greater longevity, and then you yourself pass away at the tender age of, in this case, 58 or 59. I did not know this guy. I only learned of him subsequently. I think he's kind of a West Coast guy.
I think so,
yeah. And he's very big out there, has a big following, I think has podcasts,
mm-hmm.
and maybe he had a radio show, and he had a website where he offered advice.
And glasses as well, yeah.
And glasses?
Classes.
Oh, classes.
Classes. Baseball caps.
Okay. Okay. You know, it's hard to know what happens in individuals who die during what seems like healthy exertion.
Yeah.
There, of course, is the famous case of Jim Fix.
I remember,
F-I-X-X, and he was like this athletic nut, you know, this guy who was running marathons, and he was going to town, and then, unfortunately, he dropped dead in his 60s of a massive heart attack while running a race. This is also... Also, this there was a relatively young death of this guy, El Caballo Blanco. They called him the White Horse. And he was this big running guy who was written about in the book Born to Run
mm-hmm.
as like a model of a very dedicated runner who had a very clean lifestyle. And he was also a big advocate for barefoot running in the desert. You know,
yeah.
And
well, that would be a good place to run, not out here on 6th Avenue.
Right, but not when it's, you know, 95 degrees or 110. And he one morning he went out on one of his long runs, long sojourns into the desert, and he just didn't come back. And, you know, they searched and they searched and they searched, and a few days later they found his body in a ravine. Mm-hmm. Apparently he had possibly had a heart attack and fallen, injured himself. It's not clear what the sequence was. So what's happening with people like this? Well, there are actually now studies that are new think on the benefits of very high-intensity exercise. I think that there's no question that moderate exercise is beneficial, and for the vast majority of people who undertake Ironman events and triathlons, they're way ahead of the game in terms of mm-hmm. health and longevity. On the other hand, there's a certain cohort of those individuals who may create problems for themselves. They may be predisposed for other reasons. They may not be addressing underlying cholesterol issues or familial issues or homocysteine, whatnot, the many risk factors, and instead focusing entirely on exercise. And maybe they're also on the wrong diets because sometimes exercisers do too much carbo loading, but we don't
right.
know. We don't know what happened in the
so
case of this guy.
So we can only speculate.
This guy was taking, I'm sure, every vitamin under the sun because he practiced what he preached. But vitamins are not the total bulwark against all misfortune. And some studies now show that very heavy exercisers have a couple of problems. One is that they can have atherosclerosis, but they may even have accelerated atherosclerosis because we know that very high volume blood flow through arteries creates a certain amount of turbulence and trauma that may injure the arterial wall.
Like high blood pressure would?
Like high blood pressure would, exactly. That's the theory of high blood pressure. The high blood pressure doesn't kill you immediately, unless it's like, you know, 250 over, you know, 180, maybe you could have a stroke immediately. But
yeah.
over time, there's an erosive effect of all that pressure on the walls. The walls develop trauma. It gets plastered with calcium and fibrinolytic plaque, and then you develop narrowing. So this may actually, it's been found in very heavy-duty athletes, not all of them, but in a certain percentage, that they actually have atherosclerotic plaque.
Well, this is pretty weighty stuff because the idea of intense exercise is to build up our fast-twitch muscles that keep us from becoming feeble and strengthen us in different ways and so forth. So, wow.
Yeah. So the other thing
something
that happens is some of these guys develop what's called left ventricular hypertrophy or cardiomegaly in large hearts. They have bigger hearts because their hearts have greater demand and they pump more blood. But if the heart gets too large, the muscle becomes flabby, it becomes damaged, it becomes more prone to cardiac arrhythmias. And alarmingly, there is a higher rate of cardiac arrhythmias in especially aging very intense endurance athletes. So this is one of the besides the fact that I couldn't do it, this is actually one of the reasons that I'm dissuaded from doing ultra marathons or even marathons or Ironman competitions. I kind of like the triathlon because it's a balanced thing where you do some swimming, some running, and some cycling. But it's a cautionary tale because I think some people, it's more they're exercising more with mind over matter, pedal to the metal, no pain, no gain, and you got to listen to your body. And sometimes if you push beyond your capacity, you know, it's good to strive, but it may not be that good to override your body's reserves and get into a damage mode with your muscles and joints, but also apparently with your heart. So we don't know precisely what the circumstances of this were.
That's true. That's true.
You know, I don't know if the family's going to allow an autopsy, but, you know, we mourn the passing of yet another young nutrition enthusiast. Too many die too young. And certainly, life is not a merit system. Sometimes when your number's up, your number's up.
I still will sprint up to my fourth floor apartment with a bag of 30-pound laundry.
Okay.
I won't stop doing that because it's good for me.
Right. And but I don't consider that necessarily an endurance event.
I think that's
a form of interval training that is good. And if you, you know,
the intervals are important. It's just okay.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, this is not, I think, should not dissuade people from it, because I think the negative aspect of this is going to dissuade people from taking vitamins. Because they'll say, well, look what happened to this guy. He took all these vital vitamins in the world and now he's dead. He's 2 years younger than I, so at 58 or 59. And the other thing that it may do is dissuade people from exercise and say, look, I don't exercise, but now look what good that did for this guy. I think you absolutely need to include exercise in your program. Maybe not, you don't need to be a champion or a marathon racer or do wind sprints, but exercise still is important. And the net effect of exercise, on average, is that people live longer and are more free of cardiovascular disease and heart attacks.
Absolutely. I'm going to be actually writing more about that in a future newsletter, not this week, but probably the following week, the importance of exercise. It is like a good medicine.
It is. I mean, there's actually, I think a guy wrote a book, which is entitled, you know, Exercise is Your Best Medicine. There's probably many books on that theme, but actually findings that show that virtually every disease, the risk is modified with exercise, even arthritis. We tend to think, oh, too much wear and tear. Well, actually, it's been found that runners have less knee arthritis than ordinary folk who sit around with a clicker in their hands. So, you know, just listen to your body, pay attention, work within your capacity. All right, this is a logical point for a page break. This is part one of our, it's April Fool's Day.
It is April Fool's Day.
Should we do an April Fool's story? No, we'll try not to trick you. Part one of our April Fool's edition of Q&A with Layla. We'll return in just a moment for part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.